this world. On October 7, 2023, Hamas attacked Israel. They killed around 1,200 people and took 251 hostages. A teenage boy wanders through the remains of a ravaged building. Israel immediately declared war on Hamas in Gaza.
Be careful. You might injure yourself.
With broken glass and debris at his feet, the boy walks out onto the dusty street. By summer 2024, the war is ongoing. This is the story of young people trying to survive.
Good morning. You all right?
My name is Abdullah. I'm 13 years old. I'm stuck here in Gaza. Have you ever wondered what you'd do if your world was destroyed? Could you live in a tent? Raise your baby? Would you help people? Would you try and have some fun? Most important, could you stay alive?
Men throw buckets of water and spray fire extinguishers as they battle a blazing inferno.
After all this, you could say we're experts. So let me tell you our story. Who knows? One day you might need it.
Desperate people, including mothers and their young children, carry their belongings and flee as an explosion fills the air with a thick cloud of black smoke. Gaza. How to survive a war zone. Abdullah's standing near a pile of rubble.
Let's continue our journey. Today I'm revisiting Khan Yunis camp. Right here used to be my grandfather's house. About 40 people were here, including me and my family, for a few months.
Warplanes dropped massive bombs here. We'd already been displaced 4 times when this happened.
He climbs down from the rubble and walks along a street.
It will take years to rebuild Gaza.
Surrounded by debris.
This area used to be colorful. Now it's gray, just gray.
Abdullah passes ramshackle stalls on his way through the city.
People are leaving the eastern areas of Khan Yunis. Again,
3 miles away, the Israeli army have announced an evacuation order. They're looking for Hamas and its leader, Yahya Sinwar. When the Israeli army call an evacuation order, you have to leave fast or it can be deadly.
A boy pulls another child along with him in a small four-wheeled cart. Then a man quickly rides past on a trailer pulled by a donkey. As distant explosions rumble and people flee, a woman shouts, "God damn you all. May God curse you, Sinwar." Amid the chaos, another woman carrying a large pile of belongings on her head says, "What's going on? As you can see, we only had minutes to leave." Another woman says, "The Israeli army invaded the area." Then she turns as a pickup carrying several people drives past her. A girl asks, "Mum, where are you? Mum?" As people continue to hurriedly flee the area, a young boy fearfully sobs. A man shouts, "They've killed our children, killed our women," while Sinwar is hiding under the ground. Hamas is shooting back. A terrified young girl runs and catches up with her mother. Someone asks a group of 3 kids, "What's happening?" A boy replies, "We saw people dead in front of us. One had his guts coming out of his stomach." Another boy asks, Are we in a safe place? While he walks, he explains, there's a place where we stayed last time, so we're going there to find someone who knows my father. My father was with us. He told us to go ahead and he will follow. Then there was a strike and we ran. We'll go to the place we went before. The three kids walk on, along with hundreds of others evacuating the area.
There's not many places to go.
Gaza is tiny, around 25 miles long and 6 miles wide, with a population of 2 million. After the war started, the borders were closed, and barely anyone can leave. The Israeli army ordered us to head to the safe zone, here in the middle area. The army divided Gaza into 623 blocks. I live in block 90. Everything's changed since the war started. I was in the best school in Gaza, the British school in the north. All my lessons were in English. Now I'm here living in a tent.
He jumps onto a moving trailer.
This is our new way of transportation. There's a shelter, there's another shelter. As you can see here, people are holding yellow tanks to fill out water. Trying to get drinkable water is a very hard task.
Most people lost their jobs when the war started and have to find new ways of making money.
People sell groceries. There's a guy selling birds and pet food. Almost everybody has a small store of their own. Yeah, welcome to our new life.
Moving away from Block 90 on an animated map.
Renat's 10. She lives in Block 151.
At a grocer's market stall, Renard's sister says, ask him about the price of the sweet pepper. Renard asks, how much is the sweet pepper? 13, the grocer replies.
You have to find something to distract you from the constant pressure of this war. Renard's just started an online cooking show with her sister.
Renard, I love cooking and creating food content. When she suggested the idea, I was so excited. During the war, there is no school. There's no place for us to play. So I upload videos and talk to my followers. I get creative, and it relieves my depression. Picking up a packet, Renard says, look, they have cream. We need ketchup. We might film a recipe that uses it. When her sister says, ketchup is boycotted, Renard replies, no, it's not. She reaches for some sachets of ketchup from a basket. I found a way on TikTok to see where my followers come from. They're literally from all over the world. If there is too long between posting videos, they check on me, thinking I got killed. From one of her videos, Renard smiles and says, Lebanese night's dessert, Gaza style. She says, 1 liter of water, then pours it into a pan.
Renard's lucky enough to still live in her own home. She films with her sister up on the roof.
Renard says, 6 spoons of milk powder. Normally we would use milk, but we don't have any, so we have to use water instead. She pours the milk powder into the pan and then says, let's stir. Renard stirs the mixture with a whisk, then looks up with a frown as an explosion rumbles nearby. Someone says, there's bombing. Going to the edge of the roof and taking a look, Renard says, it's close to Albia Street. As she continues to whisk her mixture, Renard says, we're not afraid anymore. We're used to it. At the start of the war, even in daytime, every bombing terrified me. Now, even in the middle of the night, I'm not scared. She spoons her mixture into a bowl, then peers over the roof ledge. This morning, I woke up to the dawn prayer. I saw a quadcopter flying really close. It was black with a light and a camera moving back and forth. I pretended to be asleep to see if it would start shooting. What's a quadcopter? It's a small military drone that shoots bullets. I saw another plane dropping missiles. Renard flashes peace signs. Seriously though, all we think about is war. How will we survive each day and get through it? Having served up her dessert, Renard smiles and says, words cannot describe how good it looks. What a creation. 245 days of war. In shaky, handheld footage, a building is bombed and a cloud of smoke rises into the air. The person filming takes cover behind a wall as another explosion goes off.
2.5 miles north of Renard's house, outside the safe zone, there's been no warning of an attack.
With drones hovering above them, someone says it's Israeli special forces. While people run through the streets and flee the airstrikes, a woman says the occupation forces have invaded Al-Burej camp. Some people have been injured inside the camp. An Israeli sniper is firing at people. A man's phone falls from his pocket as he runs away with his child in his arms. Another man helping to carry an invalid trips and falls to the ground. Someone shouts, "Everyone get out of here," as people are evacuated from a bomb site. A man emerges covered in dust and carrying a child whose forehead is red with blood. An ambulance.
Casualties are being taken to Al-Aqsa in block 128. It's the last permanent hospital in the safe zone, so it fills up fast.
The ambulance arrives at the hospital. A young boy opens the rear door, then a wounded man is wheeled out of the ambulance on a stretcher. Another man yells, "Clear the way," as he runs into the building carrying an injured child. Standing outside the hospital, a doctor says, "It's critical. The occupation forces are committing massacres in the middle area." It continues, hundreds of casualties are arriving. Many have been killed. The young boy accompanies the paramedics back to their ambulance. He says, "Take me with you," as the paramedics climb into the vehicle. One of the medics asks, "Where are you going?" The boy replies, "I want to come with you. Fill this bottle for me. Then you will take me? Yes, next time. Swear to God? Don't worry, another time." As the boy walks away, someone asks him, "Where do you want to go with him?" He says, "I went to a bombing site before and I want to go again. They're still bombing. There are a lot of injuries."
Even if you're still a child, you have to find a way to fit in.
Zakaria is 11.
He's living on his own at the hospital. He's a hustler.
A reporter wearing a protective vest and a helmet tells Zakaria, "Go and find out how many dead." Weaving through crowds of people, Zakaria says, "Get out of my way." Zakaria explains, "I'm a volunteer. I meet the press, the doctors and paramedics. I love being a volunteer. I want to volunteer for the ambulance unit." He runs back to the reporter. "Zakaria, how many were killed?" "3. Are there children?" Zakaria shoves another boy out of the road as an ambulance arrives. When I hear the ambulance sound, I get people out of the way. I tell them that there is a very serious injury. Zakaria opens the ambulance's rear door. "I help transport the dead, the injured, and kids. I love helping people." Zakaria shouts, "Clear the way," as he helps wheel a stretcher out of the hospital and over to the ambulance. "What is this?" on his gloved hands. "Blood from the injured and the dead. Aren't you scared?" "No, I'm not scared." Outside the hospital, Zachariah directs someone, while two men carry a body.
We found out later that the Israeli army had raided several houses and rescued four hostages.
274 Gazans were killed.
Bodies are covered with a blue sheet.
The hospital is important to everyone now. On top of emergency care, displaced people camp here. Journalists are based here. There's even Wi-Fi, which helps us get news in and out.
Clearing the ambulance, Zachariah asks, "Where should I start?" A man tells him, "Start with the chair."
Zachariah's mentor is Saeed.
Zachariah says, "This is hard work." Saeed is my friend. He's a paramedic. When I grow up, I want to be a paramedic too, God willing. He's doing a good job now. We'll see later. Later, I'll be sleeping at your place. I see. Saeed says, he wants us to treat him like he's one of the paramedics. Whenever I treat him like a child, he gets upset. After he stows the stretcher in the back of the ambulance, Zachariah says, let's head to Saeed's tent. I sometimes have to sleep in the CT scan room, sometimes in the journalist's tent, sometimes in an ambulance. Why don't you want to stay with your family? There's no food or water. Abdullah passes through a narrow gap between two tents.
We moved to Block 90 to be in the safe zone. But last night, close to my place, the Israeli army hit the camp with huge bombs.
I was sleeping. I heard the bombing and we got covered in dirt. The smell was horrible. I was terrified. This camp was filled with tents. They got buried underground. Oh my God.
The Israeli army said the strikes had targeted three senior Hamas militants who'd been involved in the October 7th attack.
It's indescribable.
19 people were killed.
At the edge of a huge crater, Abdullah asks, how many missiles did they fire? Four. No, it was six. A young boy. Suddenly the sky turned red and explosions rang out. We ran to pull people from under the rubble. My uncle's family, the father, mother and daughter, were killed. The boy and his friends moved to an area strewn with debris. Then he explains, we found the girl's head here, along with a bone covered in flesh under the blankets. When we saw the body parts, we couldn't speak and felt sick. They said there was a secret room for Hamas. We live here. There are no Hamas leaders in this area. Even for one or two. Is it right to kill so many people? Driving through a street with piles of rubble on the ground beneath the remains of bombed buildings, a mother looks at her sleeping newborn baby and says, she's very beautiful and she looks like me.
Bringing a baby into this place is tough. Rana's daughter is a month premature.
Lying in a hospital bed and holding her baby, Rana says, it's a lovely feeling, especially as I've been wanting a daughter for a long time and she's finally arrived. God willing, I will name her Mila. Rana sits in the back of a moving car.
Rana's been displaced three times. Now she's living with her parents and two sons in Block 128, right next to Al-Aqsa Hospital. She recently separated from her husband.
Rana arrives at a camp with her baby. Things are going to be difficult for me. It wasn't a planned pregnancy. It was a surprise. I was 17 years old when I got married. I'm now 24. If I could go back in time, I wouldn't have got married. Or I would have chosen a different partner. Holding her baby, Rana tells her young son, give her a kiss, not her mouth, her head. Rana smiles. She says, take me back to my mother's tummy, my darling.
Rana's husband was in prison for drug dealing. But when the war started, Hamas set all prisoners free. They were reunited, then she got pregnant.
Rana's mother walks through the tent and says, I love baby girls. I don't like boys. Rana explains the reason I left him was because he attacked me on the street and beat me. He was punishing me for going out without telling him. Of course, I felt humiliated as it was in front of strangers. Rana's mother bathes, then dresses her little granddaughter. Rana continues, I want to live alone with my kids. I don't need a husband. After a bomb goes off, people run along a muddy street lined on both sides by bushes and tall palm trees. Smoke thickens as people keep running in the direction of the blast.
A lot of displaced people now live in school buildings. But you have to be careful. These get bombed, even in the safe zone.
A massive cloud of thick black smoke in the sky. As injured and traumatized people are helped into the hospital, a young boy escorts a man with a cloth tied around his arm into the building. They make their way past the crowded reception and go through a door at the end of a corridor.
In the hospital, you have to be ready to do anything. Manar's been pulled out of surgery to help in the busy ER.
I heard the explosions from the hospital. I feared there was a new massacre. Most of the victims are children. 90% of the patients I'm treating today are kids. He treats an injured girl. One of the cases I handled today was a little girl. Her bone was visible. Her arm was hit by shrapnel. I tried to keep calm on the outside. I tried not to show her how distressed I felt. But inside, I was a mess. Doctors tend to the wounded girl.
The Israeli army said the school was being used as a Hamas command center. Hamas said it wasn't. In the end, about 100 people were hurt and 30 people were killed. 15 of them were children.
Paramedic Saeed's walking back to his tent. He says, I need to wash this shirt. He takes off the shirt and then says, children are so pure and innocent. Seeing them injured is one of the hardest things to witness. He gives the stained white shirt a wipe, then drips washing liquid from a plastic bottle onto it. He stores something in a locker and takes a bag off his shoulder. Holding his phone, Saeed says, headphones are the most important thing. They help me escape the war, the hospital's gloom, the bombings, the dead, and the injured. He's weight training. When I'm here, I feel at peace. I could spend all day at the gym. Especially during the war. It helps me keep going. Taking a break, Saeed drinks from a water bottle. With Zachariah sitting in front of him, Saeed asks, "What are you doing here? How did you find this place?" Zachariah replies, "I know everything." Saeed says, "Wait for me outside. We'll head to the beach." Zachariah and Saeed walk out of the gym together and make their way through the busy streets. Zachariah loves the hospital more than anything else. He works tirelessly. He pushes that stretcher at least 8 times a day. I forget he's just a child. It's weird. Have you had lunch? No. They wait at a food stall while doner kebab meat is sliced. Saeed is so kind. He loves me and I love him very much. Heading down to the sandy beach, Zachariah says, "It's so nice. Let's go, dear Saeed." Zachariah runs down a flight of stone steps to the beach. Many tents are pitched on the shore, and the sun shines brightly over the calm sea. Zachariah takes a bite of his kebab. Saeed asks, "How is it? Are you enjoying it?" Sticking his thumb up, Zachariah says, "Perfect." Saeed says the most important thing is that he shuts up. Zachariah takes off his t-shirt, then he runs into the shallows. Picking up a pair of flippers, Saeed joins him. Then they wade further into the foaming water. From Zachariah swimming and playing in the sea to war-torn buildings atop piles of debris, an automated phone call from the Israeli Defense Force. Urgent message. You are required to evacuate to the designated humanitarian zone. The Israeli Defense Forces will be conducting full-scale operations against terrorist organizations.
Every day there are more evacuation orders. We mainly get these by phone, texts, and social media. New blocks are getting evacuated. The Israeli army is getting closer to the hospital, so Zachariah is going to see his family in Block 89.
It's nighttime, and Zachariah is walking alone through the bustling block. As he passes several food stalls, he says, "The smell of food is making me hungry." "I'm going to see my family in Khan Yunis. I miss them a lot. We left our house because of shelling and bombs. We were happy, but the Israelis destroyed everything, and so did Hamas." At a stall, a man scoops nuts into a plastic bag for Zachariah, who tells him, "Give me 10 shekels worth. Make it nice." "I got nappies and a few nuts for my mum. I help out my family as best I can, especially my mum." "How do you help your family?" "If anyone gives me money, I buy food for them." Arriving at his family's tent, Zachariah asks, "How are you, Grandma?" and kisses her cheeks. She tells him, "God bless you, my dear. I hope to kiss you on your wedding day." Zachariah walks over to his aunt, who's sitting in a corner of the tent, and greets her with a kiss. Zachariah's mother says he is so attached to Al-Aqsa Hospital. "I tried to see him 2 days ago, but he ran away 6 times. His father says, "When I learned he was helping the injured and the paramedics, I felt so proud of him. Before October 7th, he was a troublemaker, especially at school. Now I feel like Zachariah is 40 years old." Zachariah says, "My father was a school principal. Since the war started, my dad is not working. He has no job, no way to make money. Are you the only one bringing in money?" "Yes, just me." Renard brushes a curtain aside. Then a smile crosses her face. She giggles and says, "I am unable to speak.
Renat was walking outside her apartment, and a bomb just exploded.
Right next to me. Israeli warplanes fired the first missile and it didn't explode. They then fired the second missile and both exploded. Everyone was running in the streets. Smoke was all over the place. Renard grabs clothes from a wardrobe while her mother packs a bag. If they invade, we will all be wiped out.
Evacuation orders are getting closer, and her family are preparing in case they need to leave fast.
Renard's mother says, "Stop, that's enough." Renard protests, "No, it's not enough. These clothes are what I wear for filming. I can't live without them." Every day more people follow me online. I feel like when I hit 1 million followers, I'll be in a tent. 323 days of war. Sitting in her tent with her baby sleeping beside her, Rana exclaims, "Oh God," as the camp is rocked by a nearby explosion. Getting to her feet, Rana peers out of the tent and asks, "Where is it?"
"When?"
Her daughter points, then Rana gasps as they look out through the ceiling of the tent and spot a huge cloud of smoke rising into the sky. Rana says, "Oh my heart." Rana, this is the second time Israeli warplanes have bombed this place. Pointing her finger, she explains, "A while ago, Israel bombed that building over there. It's very close." "In the night, I saw people wearing masks in the main street. I'm not sure, but they might be Qassam." As they leave the tent, Rana's son says, "Mom, they're going to kill you."
Before the war, Hamas governed Gaza. Their army is called the Qassam Brigade. The Israelis call them terrorists.
Walking through the street, Rana says, "They are causing us harm, even if they're far away from the tents. Israel will bombard the whole area and we're done for." Do you see how people are fleeing? People in Al-Aqsa area have been ordered to leave. Block 128 will become a dangerous combat zone. People are terrified of what will happen. Rana gazes out over the camp.
Across the street, people are starting to flee from the hospital.
"We're currently in Al-Aqsa Hospital and there's a state of panic and fear between Palestinians. This is not only a hospital, but it has been a shelter and a refuge for thousands of families, as you see here."
The reporter shouts at someone, "Focus with me." As another bomb goes off, Zakaria assists a mother and her young child. Saeed's walking through the crowd. "People have been killed in a displacement camp, but we couldn't reach it. On the way back, we were told to evacuate block 128. We're staying at the hospital. Whatever God has planned for us will unfold." "You're not leaving?" "No. If we go, who will help the people?" Someone descends some stairs. Then medical staff walk out of the hospital. People leaving through a darkened passage are silhouetted by the light from the doorway. At night, Saeed and another paramedic are standing by their ambulance outside the hospital. Saeed says, "The silence is terrifying. There's no one left in the hospital." Saeed goes for a walk around the abandoned, eerily quiet block. He says this area should be packed with people. He takes a look inside a large, empty tent. Then he walks back over to the hospital and enters through an open door. As he wanders through the hospital's quiet and dimly lit corridors and peers into a deserted ward, he says, "It's completely empty now." Back outside, Saeed looks up and tells his fellow paramedic, "The drone is right above us."
Hello.
Saeed and his colleague chat outside the abandoned hospital. 1 week later. Outside the hospital.
The Israeli army have dropped back, and a three-day pause has been announced so children can be vaccinated. Lack of clean drinking water and poor sanitation have created perfect conditions for a polio outbreak.
Filming a video with her sister, Renard says, "Hi, I'm here to get the polio vaccine. I encourage all children to get vaccinated. Let's go." After Renard's vaccine is orally administered, her sister says, "Tell me how it tastes." Holding up her phone, she tells Renard, "Stay still." Renard explains, "It's delicious, but not as delicious as my food."
Renard now has 800,000 followers online, and she's becoming a celebrity.
A man smiles and shakes Renard's hand. Then he says, "Hi, superstar, how are you? Everyone loves you and wants to support you." Her sister says, "Renard never used to leave the house, but now that she does, so many people know her." When she's asked, "Do you feel famous now?" Renard beams, nods and says, "Yes." Zachariah is being bathed.
The bombing has stopped for now, so Zachariah's family are planning a party.
"We are here for my sister's wedding. I wasn't very happy about it. I was a little bit happy, but not too much." After his bath, Zachariah pulls on a t-shirt. At the wedding, people crowd into a small room and dance. Zachariah is in the wedding procession, walking along the beach. "I asked my mum why they went ahead with the wedding while people are dying and getting injured. She said it was to make my sister happy." Zachariah stands alone on the shore. "I must have seen at least 5,000 bodies. I saw them with my own eyes." Zachariah holds an injured man's hand as he helps to carry a stretcher up the steps leading to the hospital entrance. Saeed watches Zachariah clean the back of the ambulance. "I'm together with Saeed day and night." Saeed looks out of the window as the ambulance drives along a quiet street at night. "I'm scared for him because he's amazing at his job. He's strong and courageous, always carrying injured people and body parts." Carrying stretchers, Saeed walks through a crowd and joins more paramedics who are covering a body with a sheet. A man shouts, "Step back, everyone. There's a woman's body here. Let the paramedics take care of it." "Whose body is this?" "These are the bodies of a boy and a girl." The covered bodies are carefully placed on stretchers and loaded into the back of the ambulance. "Saeed, when I gather body parts, time seems to stand still. I feel completely numb. What will happen to me when the war is over? Will I remember these scenes?" Saeed stands on a ladder and holds a black bag. "I'm afraid of what comes after the war." He looks out through the ambulance's cracked windscreen. Saeed helps carry a body into the hospital. Someone says, "Make room, there are more bodies coming." Then they transfer the body from the blood-stained stretcher to the floor. Outside, Zachariah cleans the stretchers while Saeed rinses them with water. Saeed says, "Zachariah has completely changed. He may never fit in with kids his age again." A doctor straps on a face mask before he enters an operating room.
Inside the hospital, the team are working on a 10-year-old boy. They're assessing if they will need to amputate his arm.
A surgeon says, I'll open the arm first to check the muscles. Give me a knife, please. The surgeon makes the incision and inspects the boy's damaged arm.
Well, the muscle is very pale. A dead muscle.
The surgeon uses tweezers and scissors as he carefully operates on the boy's arm. He got injured 2 days ago in a school targeting, I believe. He came in with almost 90% of his hand amputated. A drawer is closed. Then the surgeon holds up the boy's amputated arm and says, look what the Israelis are doing to the children of Gaza. This is what it comes to. There is no power or strength except by Allah. He gives the arm to another member of staff, then stitches up the wound. The surgeon says, this is one of the toughest surgeries to do. As a colleague approaches and puts a supportive hand on his shoulder, the surgeon shakes his head and says, I'm burning inside.
My only consolation from all of this is that he will perks up afterwards and becomes a bright little boy again.
The surgeon finishes the operation, then he takes off his gown and walks out of the theatre. The surgeon gives a dejected shrug as he takes a moment alone in a quiet room. He leans on a counter with his head resting on his hand. Star-like lights twinkling in the night sky above Gaza.
It's the 1st of October, 2024. Missiles are flying over Gaza. They've been launched by Iran into Israel.
Looking out from her roof ledge at the missiles passing overhead, Renard says, there's more. We're used to seeing flashes of lightning in the sky, but now it's real missiles. The Iranian missiles pass by like flaming comets. We're happy that for once the rockets aren't falling on us. There's a flash of amber light as one of the missiles lands and explodes. People are celebrating in the streets. A man puts his young son on his shoulders and celebrates. Renard says it feels nice and unsettling at the same time. We're stressed that this might lead to another year of fighting in Gaza. There are more of them up there. Do you see that? The missiles are tiny orange dots falling out of the pitch dark sky and exploding in fiery bursts of light. Clouds in the night sky are lit up as the missiles pass through them. Rana. People are saying it feels like October 7th all over again. The sky is red and everyone's celebrating. A lone palm tree is silhouetted by the fiery glow on the horizon. Rana. At the beginning, I was happy. That was the first time we invaded Israel. It was always the other way round. If we'd known this would happen to us, no one would have celebrated. We've lost so many family members and friends, over 100 people. Rana goes into her tent where her children are fast asleep and kisses her new baby's cheek. 365 days of war, 1 year. Zakaria, I'm starving. I haven't eaten anything. Have you ever had to sleep hungry? Yes, many times. I drink water to stop my stomach growling. Approaching an ambulance, Zakaria says, Youssef, I want to join you. Habibi, Youssef, I want to tell you something. When they don't let him in the ambulance, Zakaria walks away and pulls a face. Why are you starting problems with people? It's just how I am. I cause problems. If I don't cause trouble, I feel like I could kill someone. What would make you happy? A ceasefire. When Saeed climbs into the ambulance and finds Zakaria sitting in the back, he says, "What are you doing in here? Get out of the ambulance." Zakaria replies, "Okay, I'll wait here for you." Zakaria watches the ambulance drive away, then says, "He needs to go. It's a critical case." Sitting in the ambulance's passenger seat, Saeed puts his phone to his ear. On the map, the safe zone is coloured blue.
Saeed's heading out of the safe zone to what the medics call the red zone. Israeli Apache helicopters are in the area.
Saeed says, "We got calls about families trapped in an area we know is dangerous. The top three floors of the building had been bombed and they were trapped in the basement." As the paramedics arrive and approach the bomb site, Saeed asks, "This is a new bombing, right?" "Yes," someone replies. A family are ushered over to the waiting ambulance. Then Saeed says, "It's open." Before she boards the ambulance, one of the women tells Saeed, "There's a white car. Please let it follow us." An explosion sends everybody running. Saeed takes shelter in a darkened alley and shouts to the others, "Come here, come here. They're bombing the street." It's not in the building. It's in the street. Saeed, with my experience, I knew immediately this was Apache helicopter fire aimed directly at us. As the alley fills with people, someone says, "They're bombing again." Saeed advises, "Don't leave now. Wait for the Apache to leave." The paramedics tend to a man with a large bloody wound on his back. Saeed hurries over to another who's trying to get up and tells him, "Stay put." Saeed and the other paramedics put their hands on the man and restrain him. Tending to a man's wound, Saeed says, "We need more gauze from the ambulance." Saeed makes his way over to the ambulance and climbs inside. He quickly grabs a packet containing a gauze swab, jumps out of the ambulance and hurries back to the patient in the alley. As Saeed kneels down beside the patient, someone says, "They're bombing. It's in the street." The man lies, barely conscious, as Saeed opens the gauze packet. "We had one man critically injured." The man went into shock and started losing consciousness. The paramedics quickly prepare a stretcher. Then one of them shouts, "We need to leave now." A paramedic says on the count of three, 1, 2, 3. Then they transfer the injured man to a stretcher. They carry him out of the alley and over to one of the waiting ambulances. Someone shouts, "Press down on his hands," as the patient is urgently loaded into the back of an ambulance. Directing people, Saeed shouts, "People, hurry to the first ambulance. Please hurry. If you take too long, we can't help you." Hurrying to his own vehicle and climbing inside, Saeed shouts, "Close up the ambulances. Is anyone left?" Someone answers, "No." Saeed says, "Hatem, move as quickly as you can. Go, quickly." As the ambulance drives away, Saeed says, "That man won't make it." Saeed sits in the passenger seat as the ambulance pulls up outside the hospital. Getting out, he says, "Stop here." He tells a group of people, "You're safe," as he opens the back door and lets them out. Before a sobbing, distraught girl leaves the ambulance, Saeed tells her, calm down. Where are the injured? I left them in the first ambulance. Saeed shuts the ambulance door and says, the Apache shot at us, damn it. The Apache fired at us three times. Each attack fired five or six rounds, and they were directly targeting us. If the building on the corner hadn't been there, we would all have been killed. Taking a moment, Saeed says, the Apache fired on us. We're lucky to be alive. Holding up his gloved hand, he says, this here is the injured man's blood. Later, we learn that the man died.
The Israeli army said that they have no record of the Apache attack.
Saeed continues, at the end of last month, my manager was killed. We had to identify him by his shirt. The scale of attacks on paramedics has been enormous. Zakaria looks on intently as Saeed cleans the blood from inside one of the ambulances. A raging fire.
5 days after the Apache attack, at 1 a.m., an airstrike has hit tents right outside the hospital.
As people flee from the bomb site, a young woman screams as she crawls away from the inferno with her clothes and hair still on fire. A man follows her and covers her with a red blanket. A group of men tentatively approach the fire and throw their hands up in despair and disbelief. While the fire rages on and the men frantically search through the rubble, a massive cloud of thick smoke billows up into the night sky. A woman and her child are directed away from the fire, then a man covered in blood is led away. An explosion. Then a shower of electrical sparks, followed by a cloud of flame-coloured smoke. Later, the fire is out, but the air is thick with smoke and the area is strewn with rubble and the crumpled, smouldering remains of cars and tents.
70 people were injured in a fire and 6 were killed, including a 19-year-old hospital patient.
Paramedics are on scene. Zakaria, I saw the boy burning with my own eyes. I was sleeping and woke up at the sound of the explosion. I immediately started running. This is the 10th time they've targeted Al-Aqsa Hospital. A burned car lying in a mangled heap.
The Israeli army later said that it was a precise strike on terrorists who were operating inside a command and control center.
Sifting through the rubble and picking up the charred remains of personal belongings, Zakaria says, I haven't seen any Hamas members or any police. Do you like Hamas? No, Zakaria replies. Why not? Because they started the war. They caused all this misery. This is wrong. He takes a moment. I want to be a paramedic, but first I need to get out of here. Driving along a road flanked on either side by the remains of bombed buildings.
News is being shared that the leader of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar, the man who planned the October 7th attack on Israel, has been killed.
Looking at a video on her phone, Rana says, this is the footage of Sinwar's killing. This building is where he was targeted. Here, you can see him sitting on a sofa. Grainy footage of Sinwar sitting on the sofa. His face was covered and his weapon was ready, prepared for battle. People were saying he was hiding in the tunnels or in a fancy apartment. They claimed he was living comfortably while we suffered, hiding out after October 7th. But the video shows that he was fighting and resisting Israeli forces. He wasn't hiding. It was a brave, honorable way to go. May he rest in peace. What about the Israeli hostages? Civilians shouldn't be kidnapped, replies Rana. We don't want civilians to get hurt or die on either side. Rana sits by a campfire.
Renad's reached 1 million followers, but bombs are still dropping in the safe zone.
Renad says, we were just sitting here when a bombing suddenly went off. The blast was so loud and there's gunfire too. Sobbing, she continues, we're all so frightened right now. Renard trembles as she looks out of her window. 466 days of war, 15th of January 2025.
The war seems like it's been going on forever. Then there's an announcement. Renard's gone to watch at a cafe with her brother.
I thank our Egyptian brothers and our partners in the United States. Renard says, now I have hope. We declare the ceasefire in Gaza between the two conflicted parties. Renard smiles, then she grimaces a little and covers her ear as fireworks begin to go off. Her father holds on to her as people bustle in and out of the cafe. With a radiant smile, Renard says, if Gaza goes back to how it was before, I'll stay for sure. While ecstatic crowds celebrate on the streets, a man sits on another man's shoulders and waves the Palestinian flag. Rana throws her head back and laughs. What's happening now is truly amazing. I've been waiting so long for this moment, and now it's here. It all feels like a dream. Surrounded by armed fighters in black balaclavas, three women are transferred from one car to another.
The ceasefire is starting, and the Qassam Brigade is handing over three Israeli hostages.
A war-torn street.
People are going to see what's left of their homes.
Zakaria, I pray that those who survived can safely return to their homes. I hope to return to school and continue my studies with my teacher, Walid.
My house was completely destroyed, so my family have found an apartment. It's damaged, but it's better than the tents. And I just turned 14.
I got old. I'm getting old, actually. My mustache is growing. Everybody tells me I got old.
My greatest hope is that the ceasefire continues and Gaza goes back to what it was before, or even better. But my biggest fear is that the war will return.
57,136 people are dead or missing in Gaza since the war began. 17,841 of them are children. All casualty statistics in this film are from the Hamas-run health ministry. International journalists are blocked by Israel from entering Gaza independently, so are unable to verify figures. This film was made by two cameramen in Gaza in daily contact with producers in London. Thank you.